Welcome to the Will and Dave Show, where we talk about hard things, whether it's comfortable or not. We think those conversations are necessary and important. We think that having different opinions is crucial to a healthy discourse. So saddle up and enjoy the fireside chat.
Hey, hey, William.
Hey, Dave. How's it going?
Good. I can't even complain.
I'm here. That's good.
I mean, I would complain, but so far I haven't found anybody to pay any attention to it.
Am I allowed to complain just a little tiny bit?
Sure.
I think we're zoomed in on me a little bit much.
We'll zoom
I don't
out
think
then.
Everyone needs to. Well, do you want me to zoom out or do you want to do it on your end?
Let me look and see.
I think you have me zoomed in a little bit. Yeah, there we go. That's good.
There we go. I have the power.
Perfect.
Who knew I had that much power? Yeah. So, it's been a bit of a week for me.
Oh, do tell.
I have a job.
What a novel concept.
It has been a lot of years. I was sitting in my boss's office here the other day, and I was lamenting the fact that I've never had to go to work for a lot of years. I've had to work, but I never had to show up at 9 o'clock in the morning and be there till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which for some people is not really work, but you know, because it's an easy day. But I haven't had to do that since before you were born, probably. Maybe not. No, it was after you were born.
Yeah, because you did work at Trim Tech and things like that.
Yeah, that's true. I did do that.
Well, after I was born. So, no, you had a 9-to-5 before.
Yeah. But it's been a long time.
Good old number one fan, Tim.
Yeah, it has been a long time. So, yeah, so that, it was, I had to go to work today. We had appointments and meetings and stuff. And
ironically, the only quote-unquote bad spot of my week is the same thing. I actually had to go to work this week. That's a good thing because I haven't been working a lot lately. And so this week actually had lots of work in it, which was really nice.
You also were working for your sister.
On the side, yeah.
Yes, on the side.
Not a lot, just like a couple of hours. But
you make sure and report that, you know, we'll get to CRA so they get every dime out of your dollars.
Yes, I will absolutely do that because I'm very concerned with making sure that my government gets every penny they can out of me. That is my prime directive in life, is to give Justin Trudeau every cent he owes. He is owed from me, from my hide.
Okay. So before we get into the meat of the show, the sponsorship, which is the real meat of the show, we received a comment on the show last week, and I'd like you got to read it and intro it a little bit and give a little bit of our feedback a little bit. And
right.
As it was good. I thought it was.
It's good enough well that we're talking out. About it in the show today. Like,
yes, it was well thought out.
Yeah, we get comments. Not a lot. We're not that big yet. But we do get comments. We have people chatting with us in our streams from time to time. And it's really nice to have that back and forth. But it's rare that we get like a really kind of a long form, really well thought out and articulated comment. And this one was particularly noteworthy. And so we want to talk about it and what it what questions it brought forth on the show today.
We do. And so we'll head there right now and you can read it to them.
If you throw it up, I'll read it out for our podcast listeners.
There you go.
Sanctions, when viewed socioculturally, change dramatically.
No, that'd be definitions when viewed.
Definitions. It's covered up by the little viewer symbols, I was guessing.
Sorry.
Definitions, when viewed socioculturally, change dramatically. When people are looking for answers, quote unquote, for freedom, truth, and leadership, they're all looking through different lenses depending on their identity, ideology, religion, class, etc. There was almost a conversation about it at the 30-minute, 51-second mark, and I was so hopeful, but it quickly derailed in favor of talking about beer, hot dogs, and sauerkraut and chocolate cake. Don't knock it till you try it. Too bad. I do know the definition of the word pragmatic, and unfortunately, Byrne doesn't meet the criteria to define himself as such. When religious ideology mixes with reality, it's impossible to be truly pragmatic. As a man of faith, I'm sure he feels principled and morally driven to honor his convictions by participating in the convoy, but that drive is intrinsically motivated by dogma, not objective reasoning. I'd be interested in hearing a conversation that dissected the convoy participants, or Byrne's, personal ideology, where terms and buzzwords like freedom, oppression, and individuality, not politically, are not politically defined. I think you'd be led to the same conclusion as the vast majority of Canadians that the Freedom Convoy was nothing but an incoherent holy mission. So I'm going to give a quick the cliff notes of the response that I sent.
Okay.
To that person. If anyone wants to read it, they're welcome to. It's still up on the video, I believe. The long and short of it is that this commenter is absolutely right. I did misuse or started the trend of misusing the word pragmatic. By definition, yes, being a man led by religious convictions isn't necessarily pragmatic in the literal sense, in that it is a very logically driven decision or series of decisions. But I feel like that is technically correct, but I was using pragmatism in more of a what's the word I'm looking for? A colloquial sense in how we use it kind of socially, how we would use pragmatic as just being kind of matter of fact and just doing what needs to be done type mentality. So yes, the commenter is technically correct. And I appreciate them pointing that out. I could have chosen better words. I have lots of words to choose from. The English language is a vast and shallow pool. And they're not wrong about the fact that, yes, all of his decisions, including his choice to go down to go down to Ottawa in this convoy, are going to be shifted through the lens of his social setting, his race, his religion, his financial setting. All of those things are going to play into why he would go down there or why he would consider going down there. But where my conclusion differs from the commenter is that I don't necessarily think that being religious is inherently bad, or looking at something through a religious lens
right.
is inherently bad. I mean, we all look through life in general through whatever lens we exist in. What was the word they used? Sociocultural lens?
I'll bring it back up here.
We all look through life that way. It just happens that some of them are religious-based and some of them are science-based. And I think it's reductionist to just write off anything through a religious lens. I mean, admittedly, I personally don't look at things through a religious lens because I think that I don't, believe in a God. So, but to write off somebody's opinion just because they do, I think is boiling them down to one little tidbit. And I don't think that's particularly fair to people or their ideologies.
Yeah, I'm just reading this again, and she had me right until the last sentence. And I was reading it, and there's a number of things I agreed with her on. I think that when you look at any issue, it's through your lens.
Mm-hmm.
Like anything is through a lens.
Yeah.
If it's an ideological lens, or if it is a religious lens, or if it is obviously... For those in power, it's through a political lens.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us are viewing things through a lens. And those are all colored according to all sorts of things. Our dogma, our beliefs, our politics, our family, our emotional mood at the time will color our how we see things.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read the comments on the convoy and I look at people who are viewing it from opposite angles or points of view, I think it would be extremely harsh to look at the people who I don't agree with and say, you're incoherent, so therefore you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only moment I took issue with her. You can call us on the pragmatism and that comment. You can say it's motivated through dogma. I'm not sure I believe that, except I can hear that.
Well,
when you say it's incoherent holy mission, I don't think that it was.
So speaking as someone from the left, I don't think that that statement is entirely wrong. I mean, from my point of view, the entire purpose of the convoy was illogical. That doesn't mean I don't empathize with why they did it. It just means that I don't think that it was right that they did it. So incoherent, maybe, and holy mission, you know, a good chunk of the people involved in the rally were religious, as far as I know. But I wouldn't say they were all. I'm sure there were many secular people involved with that movement and are still involved with that movement. And I don't want to lump them together with people who are there for religious purposes. And technically, the word dogma is correct. I just think that the word dogma carries, in the same sense that I use pragmatism in a kind of colloquial sense, I feel like dogma kind of carries a bit of baggage with it, in the sense that it's a term that's usually used with a negative connotation. Like, we usually use it in a negative way. I wouldn't positively say, you know, I like John and his dogma. That's not usually read as a compliment, no matter how nicely I might say it. That's usually kind of inferred as a negative. And so I don't love the choice of words there, but I don't think they're necessarily wrong either. I think that technically it's the right word. I mean, it's,
I agree with that statement. He was colored.
Yeah.
His viewpoint is colored that way. It's only at the end when she said it's an incoherent holy movement, is you're lumping everything he did and saying it doesn't matter as you don't agree with it. And I absolutely agree it's colored.
Mm-hmm.
Through his angle, his religious, his convictions. So all of those, all his angle on this, absolutely, it's colored by that.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it wrong. It makes it different. Yeah. You know, and
I mean, and it's tricky. Like I say, I don't agree with the purpose of the convoy. And so do I think that the convoy is wrong? Yes. But do I think they should be allowed to do it? Also, yes. I mean, I do think that the convoy was incorrect in its purpose, or illogical, at least, in its purpose. But I think that it's kind of part and parcel with living in what we call a free country, that they should be allowed to voice that opinion. How far that goes in terms of, you know, clogging up a city, I don't know. We certainly don't think that it necessitated the response that they got.
Right. Okay, well, let's move on to the meat of the show, which is the support of
shilling.
The show. A shilling, yes. If you want to support the show for as little as a cup of coffee, which I'm headed up, got to see William in a few weeks, I will spend it all on him.
Aww.
So for $5, you can buy us a cup of coffee. Head to buymeacoffee.com/Will and Dave Show. And for the price of one little cup of coffee, you can support the show. Mm-hmm. While we're at it, you can also shop at those who support the show. One of our sponsors is Northern Truss, owned and operated by Mallory Smith. Absolutely no relation. I need to get my head motion. No relation to either of us on the show.
There you go. You got it.
Where if you need floor systems or trusses, Northern Truss is the place to go. Fort St. John. And
building your community one truss at a time.
One truss, one stick of wood at a time.
Yes. Expensive stick of wood at a time.
My God, I was at Home Depot today. I grabbed a photo. I sent it to Mallory, actually, of a sheet of OSB.
Yep.
Which I remember when I built my camp, I bought them for $8.96 a sheet or something. $51 US for a sheet of OSB.
Oh yeah, it's ridiculous.
Oh my gosh.
I think Chad was saying when he went to go pick up, he was picking up lumber for the stairs. He was estimating that his 16-foot 2x8s or 10s were going to cost him about $80 a board.
Oh my gosh.
Per board.
You can chill for our other sponsor.
We are also sponsored by Stitch by Susan and her associated podcast, Measure Twice, Cut Once. Since Bashusen has been our longest running sponsor, no relation whatsoever to us. But yes, she has a wide variety of products and videos, from live streams to the podcast to, I believe, pattern. I'm not sure if she still sells patterns, but I know she sells courses. She has quilting masterclasses she yes. sells yes. that she herself made. They're made with all the love and care that one might expect from my mother.
And my
yes.
And my wife.
Yes. Stitch by Susan or Measure Twice, Cut Once.
Or Susan Smith.
We highly recommend checking her out. Even if you're not into quilting, like outside of the ad, even if you're not into quilting, just listening to the podcast is some of the best relaxing ASMR you can ever have.
ASMR? What is ASMR?
I can't think of the acronym.
Okay, now I got to look it up, because now you use one of these stupid words again. ASMR.
Autonomous sensory meridian response. A relaxing, often sedative sensation that begins on the scalp and moves down the body. So it's technically not the right term, but we use it kind of as a catch-all for really pleasant and relaxing sounding things, whether it's music or people talking, people with very relaxing voices.
Okay. Susan, you've just been described in a whole new manner.
As a sedative. Man, we do the best ad spots.
She was doing a presentation this morning, and I was helping her on setup and teardown, and we're leaving the show, and one of the ladies, she walks up to me, and she said, I just love your wife. She is absolutely amazing. Since the day I saw her, she said, I think she's the most amazing person ever. And I looked at her, I paused for a minute, I said, you and I have something in common.
You big snuck up you.
Mom wasn't even there to hear it. She was inside. We were out at the car.
So. Now she's heard it.
Well, if she's listening.
I commend you on the incoming brownie points.
So moving on with the show, after the shilling is done, and we've been meaning and get to hit on this a little bit, is on the idea of freedom. And are we free? America is held up, you know, as the bastion of freedom.
They certainly hold themselves up as that.
Yes, and we have some examples of this, and we'll play here in a moment. But we've been looking at this for a while now about, are we really free, and what does freedom mean, and how should we use the freedoms we have?
Yeah, and I think our examples are going to transition a little bit into just like a generalized, is America as great as it says it is? But keep in mind, as we're talking about that and watching these videos, that we're using that kind of as a lens with which to look through, is America really as free as America thinks it is?
As an example of the world, though.
Yes. No. As an example of the world, and just like, because a lot of our examples aren't just related to freedom. They're going to talk about, you know, American education or human rights, etc. And so it's not expressly on freedom, but we're showing these clips, and just as we go through them and talk about them, keep in mind that using that lens to look at America and its ideas of freedom.
So here's the first one.
Hi, thank you very much for the talk and for speaking to us today. My question is about how often in your videos and articles you talk about America being the best country in the world. And I'm wondering whether that contradicts your belief in both economic freedom and the right to life for the unborn. Because based on indices I've seen for economic freedom, for example, America is, I think, 17th on Cato Institute's Index of Freedom, 12th for Heritage Foundation's Economic Freedom Index. And for right to life for the unborn, it's, I think, one of only 7 countries that permits third trimester abortions. So how would you give like a factual defense for America being not just one of the best, but the best country in the world?
Sure. Okay, so here's how I'd put it. The best baseball team.
Okay, I'm gonna pause this, Will. I just have to give just a little bit of a shout out that this is not your favorite person in the world, and Ben Shapiro is not my favorite person in the world, and just hearing his voice is the exact opposite of ASMR or whatever that acronym is.
Yes. Dolby. Yes. He has He doesn't have that punchable of a face, but his voice is very punchable. To go
if
back,
Susan
to
is on one end of ASMR or whatever that was. Shapiro is the other end,
where she's soothing and relaxing and calming. Shapiro is like fingernails on a chalkboard. The voice.
Okay, so now we'll continue to hear his response.
In baseball, is the Washington Nationals? They won the World Series. Okay, that does not mean that every player on their team is the best at his position. Right, the United States is the best overall. If you could choose anywhere in the world to grow up, to have a chance at success, the United States would be the place. We have the most robust economy. We have freedoms that you don't have in other places in the world, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of assembly. We have constitutional freedoms guaranteed. Right? All of these things are wondrous things that not only are unique, but also undergird the rest of Western civilization. I mean, again, as the United States falls, so does everybody else. That does not mean that I think that our generalized abortion policy is the best on earth, nor does it mean I think that our generalized tax policy is the best on earth. Now, it is also true that the Economic Freedom Index, very often, like that particular study, tends to deal with regulatory climate. The United States' regulatory climate with regard to foreign investment, for example, is weak and needs to be strengthened. That's why we all are looking to make it better. Right? America can get better in a variety of ways. But what I mean by that is America is the least racist country on earth. It is the place with the most opportunity on earth. It has done the most good for the most people in America and around the globe. America is the most rights-based country on earth. It has the best creed that has ever been created by man in the history of man. It seems like a pretty good start.
Those are
so
bold and subjective statements.
So I was reading, I had the radio on today. They were, We were driving somewhere. I had it out on a local news, which is a right-wing news station, although it was an ABC News report.
How dare you?
They're talking about Russia and, again, the war in Ukraine. And they're saying that there are a whole lot of refugees are going into Poland, out of Ukraine, and they're ending up in Poland. Again, they're nearing in their capacity of what they can do. And this was a reporter from, I believe, from Britain, if I remember correctly. And it was fuzzy. It was like 8 hours ago. So, when you get old, it gets fuzzy that old.
Yeah, that's sometimers.
Yes. His angle was, why is it the U.S. accepting more refugees out of Ukraine? Is that is their role in the world? Historically, is they have accepted a lot of refugees out of from around the globe. And he was asking the U.S., why aren't you doing more? And that is, I believe, the angle from Ben Shapiro here, in which he says, everybody wants to be in the U.S. Or it's not entirely wrong.
It's not entirely wrong, but he's also making a lot of very broad and brash statements as to the qualities of the United States, like calling it the least racist country in the world. Sure. Or claiming that the Constitution is the most fantastic document ever written. Sure. I mean, it's good. Is it the best? I don't know. I feel like that's a very subjective statement to make.
The
constitutional one's subjective. The racist one is probably wrong. That's probably wrong. We're one of the we as far as like first
use
world
we
countries,
loosely as you're in Canada, I'm in the U.S. So use we loosely.
We as first world countries. So I'm talking about a large portion of countries in the UN. Right. I think that America is the one that probably struggles the most with race being an ongoing issue right now, above pretty much everyone else.
I think that race is looked at as a problem. I don't know that you can make an argument that race always is the problem.
I push back on that because I don't think there's any other country on the planet that is as aggressive towards people based on their skin color in first world countries as America is. I mean, just look at with coronavirus, the amount of the incredible spike in anti-Asian violence across the country is vastly out of proportion to any other country on the planet. You don't hear about any reports in other countries or any meaningful number of increases and things like that. It's being aggressive towards people based on factors that they don't have any control over is almost a part of American culture at this point.
Hold on a second. So I don't argue that there were actions against those of Asian, and it actually had happened to some friends of mine at school.
Mm-hmm.
But that really is not a racist issue. It's an issue because the coronavirus is believed in some circles to have originated in China.
Yes, so, but that's just a talking point. But they attribute...
to say that it's racist means that the impetus is because of skin color or race. Except it's not. It's from the impetus is because there's a disease here. You and yours but are who brought
but
it here.
The violence isn't against scientists. Scientists would have done it if they were. It's against people based on a nationality or an unchangeable factor. It's
yes, except it's because of where they're from and what they are viewed to have brought here.
They could have been born and raised in America, and it still doesn't change the fact that they are other. America
and I
has
give
a problem
you that.
With other.
And I give
whether
you it, that.
Yeah.
Whether, but whether the it's reason other skin, for other the race religion, is not their skin color.
I think it is. I
no,
think
it's
they're
because
an easy target.
Of what they are perceived to have
because
to have brought. If it happened in Uganda, it would have been for
against black people.
Yes. So it's not
that's
the
still
race.
Racist.
If it had happened in England, it would have been against anybody from Britain who are white and predominantly white. It's not the color of the skin. It's because of what they're perceived to have brought.
It would have been due to their nationality. It's effectively the same thing. It is discrimination.
It's discrimination, but it's not racist. It's because,
only because they share the race, because they can't tell the difference between white A and white B.
It's because
as soon as they hear their
of
voice,
the perceived it's, threat. It's because of the perceived
yes,
threat.
Yes, of course it is. That doesn't change the fact that it's still racist. The reasons for being racist doesn't change whether it is or isn't racist. It's still racist.
Okay.
It's because they are judging a person, the quality of their character in its entirety, based off of their race, that defines it as racist.
That's where I think you're wrong, Will. Will.
Watch me Google it.
No.
Prejudice, discrimination, or antagonism directed against a person or people on the basis of their membership in a particular racial or ethnic group.
Here's my opposing view to that. It's not because of their race. It's because of the threat that they are perceived to carry.
Yes.
Rightfully or wrongfully...
That is a hallmark of racism, is you attribute a negative thing to that race so it makes them easy to hate. Like, why a person hates another race is irrespective of the fact that they are being racist by hating them because of their race. Like, it doesn't matter why people are mad
at Asians. It doesn't matter why they're mad at people.
No. I mean, even if we had unequivocal, like absolute and unequivocal proof that China had intentionally unleashed the coronavirus on the world.
Yes.
An American beating up an Asian person in America just because of the color of their skin, because of that fact. The fact that China did it does not change the fact that they beat up an Asian person because they were Asian. That's racist.
I'm going to use an extreme example, and don't go too far with this analogy as it will fall apart. I'm giving you an easy out there. But if you walk up and you hit me,
mm-hmm.
and I look at you and I say, hey, don't do that, and I get angry at you,
mm-hmm.
is it because of your race?
No.
No, it's because you hit me.
Yeah.
So if there is a whole group of people, and they're all men,
mm-hmm.
and you walk up and you're in this group of people, and you mm-hmm. hit me, and I get mad at all the men in this group who are there, and you're all a part of a group of people, and you walk up in this group of people and you hit me and I get angry.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay for me to look at all of those men in the group and say, I don't like you because all of you are hanging out. You're all the same to me.
That's not a good analogy.
But you're the one who hit me.
That's not a good analogy.
It is, because here's the point. It's you hitting me is what has caused me to look at all those other men. No.
It's, yes.
No, 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 no. You hitting me, and I broke my pen.
Good job.
I'm gestating at you with. Bye, 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 bye. You hitting me is why I'm angry and hurt, is because you hit me. And so I look at all the men who are in this group. You're the one who hit me, except I'm angry at all the men at the group as I perceive that all of them are like you. But it's your action that caused it. It's not the color of the skin that caused it. It's the initial action that caused me to hate the people or to be angry with the people. It doesn't make me right. And I want to make this very clear. It does not make me right.
Your analogy is backwards. If I hit you and then all of a sudden you ascribe your distaste towards all men because I hit you, that would be sexist.
So not all men. It's all the men in the group that you're a part of. It's all men with beards. Yeah. It's all men with beards.
Okay, let's for this example, let's say I'm a black person and I hit you.
Yes.
Or a Chinese person and I hit you.
Yes.
And you ascribe your hatred now towards all black people or all Asian people. That's racism. Even if it's just the ones that I'm near, the ones
but
from
you
my
hit
country.
Me. But you hit
yes,
me.
Yes, but you hating every one of my skin color because of my action is still racist. Okay. You're ascribing your distaste for me and my actions to an entire group, specifically a group in this particular usage of racism due to their race.
So
or ethnicity.
I'm making a distinction, William. I'm making a distinction as I don't agree with it. And so I don't want anybody to hear, well, he's sticking up for people who get mad at Asians. No, because I think they're wrong. But the reason for their angst is not because of their skin color, as it could have been a black person, it could have been a Japanese person, it could have been a person from Britain,
it
could have been a Dutch person.
And it would have been racist if there were any of those other options.
But it's not. It's not the color of the skin, it's because of the action.
It doesn't matter. The action is almost irrelevant. They are taking out their anger over an action on an entire race, an entire ethnic group. That is racist. Like, that is textbook.
See, I push back and I say it's wrong.
I mean, yes, it's wrong. But
it's wrong,
still
but I don't think it's racist.
Racism,
I just think it's mis...
Racism is just describing the specific variety of wrong.
See, I think you're wrong. I think in America, if you look at racism, you know, for black people, I don't think Americans are looking at black people and said, you guys... Why did you come here over to our shores? No.
Because we stuck them on boats and drugged them over here in chains.
We bought them.
Like
that is racism. And I agree with you.
It's just a different degree of racism. It doesn't change the fact that both examples are racism.
Well, let's take a comment before we... What's the point of finding the logic behind these mistakes? These attacks? The reason is because they're dumb. And I would agree with that. I think they're wrong. I think it is obviously misplaced. And we want to end that because the whole point of this is don't do stupid.
Yes, it just happens that America seems to have a really high proclivity towards stupid based on race. Like we are, like in a global sense, in like a a large scale social sense, we are like the poster children for ostracizing others. Whether it's a small town like them outsiders ain't from around here, or it's a race, or it is a religion, we seem to be mired in this them and us mentality.
So use we loosely then, because you live in Canada.
Yeah.
So use we loosely.
I'm saying myself as an American, even though I am not. But
I know.
For the purpose of this discussion.
Yes.
And It's like America's special brand of anger. Other people, other nationalities seem to get angry over certain things. America seems to have like really cornered the market on hating people based on race and religion. And so to say that we are the least racist country in the world kind of reeks of crap. Because we kind of are the face of first world racism. And whether it's tribalism or not, it's still racism. Where the racism comes from doesn't change what it is. Its degree doesn't change what it is. It's still hatred based on race. And so this is devolving into a long rabbit trail based off a single statement that Ben Shapiro made, but it's just a prime example of him making a statement without fact, without reference, that is, I don't know if I go quite so harshly as to say demonstrably false, but certainly questionable. And it's one of the cornerstones of his statement that America is the greatest country in the world, and it's just not true. To say that we are the least racist country is not an accurate statement at all.
So, and actually, I would agree with that. I believe that there are nations which are more race inclusive. Is that a good word? I don't think
more inclusive would be a good way of putting it.
It is not as large an issue, but they also are not as large as ours. So, I think if you were in China and you were a part of that offshoot north. Western, what's the name of that offshoot?
Taiwan?
No. There's a county in China who they've been locking up. I'll look it up off the show. And if you were, it's a sect in China. And again, mm-hmm. I'll look it up.
But yes, it's just, I'm not saying that America is the most racist country in the world, but I would say that calling ourselves the least racist country is wildly out of whack.
And I would agree. Yes, the Uyghurs are who it is. They've been imprisoning them. It's been an issue for a lot of years. And if you were to look at them and say, is China a racist country? I think everyone in that anyone says, heck yeah.
Yeah.
So I think absolutely. When we look at any one of these issues, and again, this is where I like his point, and I was making it earlier with you this afternoon, is that if you look at any in particular like item in history, and again, you focus on any one thing, it's easy to poke holes in it. Except I believe historically, if you look at the countries in the world today or in history, the U.S., I believe, is going to be, what's the phrase I want?
They'll be looked on favorably
in the light of history. I think that Canada is, irregardless of what happened a month ago in Canada, is I think historically, if you look at Canada, as far as freedoms are viewed, I think that it will be looked favorably. And again, that's going to be an action which is going to shade it maybe a little bit, except it's not going to mean that it's a horrible country. It just is a bad thing they did.
Yes. I just...
And we look at the U.S. and there's lots of holes that you can poke in the U.S. as they do a lot of things. And they are huge. And they are a huge global power. And yeah, they do some bad things. Okay, we'll look at some of those either this evening or another show.
I think that a lot of the good things that you might be ascribing to America, you know, pushing for freedoms and more liberties for everyone and all those different things, I think those are great things, but I think they're happening in spite of America as opposed to because of America. I think that the American government has done just about everything within reason to hold that back from happening over the last couple of decades, where other countries are, in a social sense, moving forward in their thinking, and America seems intent on trying to dig its heels in every other administration.
Okay, let's play this other clip.
That is definitely being tainted. Yeah, let's play the other clip. Let's do that first.
As this will sort of, it gives the other view of Ben Shapiro.
Yeah.
And some of you are going to have seen this and you're going to recognize it. And that's okay because.
If you have, you have good taste in television, by the way, if you have seen
it's an awesome show, yes.
Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Jenny. I'm a sophomore and this is for all three of you. Can you say in one sentence or less what, you know what I mean? Can you say why America is the greatest country in the world?
Diversity and opportunity.
Lewis?
Freedom and freedom. So let's keep it that way.
Well, the New York Jets. No, I'm going to hold you to an answer on that. What makes America the greatest country in the world?
Well, Lewis and Sharon said it, diversity and opportunity and freedom and freedom.
I'm going to pause it there as he's right. Often in America, it's this argument of we're free. And those on the left are all about, you know, inclusivity and diversity and that. And they're held up as these ideals. If you're on the right, it's because I have the freedom. I can own guns or I can do the things I want to do. If you're on the left, it's because of the diversity. It would be immigration. And I believe that those are the are those opposite views. And we are sort of are looking at them and saying, wait a minute, maybe it's not all it's said to be.
Yeah.
That's all you have to say about that? Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. If that's all you have to say.
I've got more as we get into it. Okay. I don't want to slow us down.
Okay, just hold your hand up if you want me to stop it.
I'm not letting you go back to the airport without answering the question.
Well, our Constitution is a masterpiece. James Madison was a genius. The Declaration of Independence is, for me, the single greatest piece of American writing.
Okay, I meant to do this earlier. I'm sorry. I apologize. There's some language in this clip, so for those of you who are easily offended, you might not want to watch the next few minutes because he lets a few F-bombs out.
If you can live through that, though, it's worth the watch.
It is worth the watch.
The language doesn't tarnish the message.
You don't look satisfied.
One's a set of laws and the other's a declaration of war. I want a human moment from you. What about the people? Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying
yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of her paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it anytime he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey!
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl. Just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories. Number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period generation period ever period. So when you ask what makes...
Okay, I'm going to stop it there as...
That's the gist of it, yes.
Well, I'm going to finish it. I just want to bring this up because I think it's key... that he looks at this young girl and says, you are a member of the worst period ever. And it's your period, as this is an old show, and it probably was more when you were her age. I believe that one of the issues with my generation is we look at your generation, we say this is your fault, or
yeah,
you are the ones who hold these values. And I don't know that that's fair.
It isn't. I mean, just look at it, inflation as an example. We're all boggled by the rate of inflation, and yet at the same time, we seem to, an older generation seems to hold the newer generation to the same set of ideals in terms of, you know, you work hard, you can pay for a house and a car and a family, and you just can't. There's no way that you, that an average person, like the average American on the average American income, can actually support purchasing a house and raising a family and a car on a single job. It just doesn't happen. It's impossible. The rate of inflation of education and relative to the wage increase is astronomical. It's obscene how much less money we make relative to how much more things cost. And so to hold this generation, my generation, to the same sort of expectation of where I should be at life, or how well I should be doing in life, or how hard I should be working, is silly. It's short-sighted.
Periods. When you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite? Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars. Acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore. Enough?
I love the clip. I'm going to push back on it. It's my own clip, but I'm going to push back on it.
It is old. It's about 15 years old, if I remember correctly. It's
been a little while.
What are you going to push back on?
A lot of the wonderful things that we did, I say again, we loosely, yeah. I'm not American. They're great things in a sense that they are big. They were monumental. They pushed the world forward. They propelled this new modern age that we're in now. A lot, too many of them, but a lot of them are built on blood. Like a lot of the biggest advancements that America made are because of awful things that they did. You look at things like, what's the word for it? During like the sugar craze, back when, you know, easy access to sugar and cocoa and all these things were revolutionizing how we consumed sweets and chocolate and things like that. Like that is a big thing. It's a multi-billion dollar industry now. Things like that were built on the backs of people who went out into jungles and effectively forced the locals to work in camps that they built and economically imprisoned them. Like a lot of that's just a tiny little example. We've done so many awful things. And I don't want that to say that we haven't done good things, but to say that we need to go back to the way things were isn't necessarily the best way to look at it. I like the comment that Kyle said that we shouldn't be blamed for the sins of our ancestors, but we should try to do better. And I agree. And I think just like in that clip, the best way to start doing better is to admit that we've done things wrong, and to hide behind, oh, we did things wrong, but we did good things too, is to try and minimize the bad things that we did.
I would argue that anything large, if you look through history, not only the U.S., but any expansion of history, any advancement of history or in history, was almost always at the expense of somebody. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have fire if somebody hadn't burned their fingers after a lightning strike. That's a weak example, but you know what I mean.
That's an innocent example, which, yeah.
There always is pain involved.
Either
for good reasons or bad reasons. There always is pain. If you look at the Roman Empire, if you look at the Ottoman Empire, if you look at the British Empire, and now if you look at the American Empire, there are moments in it when you look at it and you say, what the heck were you thinking?
Yeah.
Look at Britain and India, you know, and you say, what were you thinking when you go into India and you hold a nation? You colonize
it. In all the worst senses of the term, you colonize it.
Right. And then America looks at Britain and says, you ain't doing that to us. And we throw their tea in the harbor and we kick them out. And now we're saying, you did it to other people. You know, America did exactly what Britain did.
Yeah.
A different way. But to look at history and say, oh, they did really large things, yes, except it was at the expense of people. It always is. Or almost always is.
Well, I think that's a big part of why there's such a disconnect between... So this is me personally. I think this is why I have such a large disconnect between idealizing, quote unquote, kind of common sense economic and fiscal policies, because I feel like a lot of what we try to do from a conservative standpoint in terms of pushing our economy forward and a more open and free, quote unquote, free economy, mm-hmm. a more capitalist economy, is all in service of continuing growth as it has been. Because I feel like the generation before me that was what they grew up in. They grew up in a time of extreme growth, kind of a golden age.
Right.
And I don't think that's tenable. I think at this point we've hit a phase where there's a very big chunk of the population in my age demographic. They would rather stop growth and fix the things that we broke getting here. We broke so many things on the way to where we're at now. I feel like this is me personally, that I feel like it's worth expending growth and the furtherment of technology and it's worth losing money. It's worth giving up having rich people to fix the things that we broke along the way.
Here's the thing though, Will, and I say this in all, age humility. It's a wonderful ideal.
It's not impossible, though.
But all that money has to come somewhere.
Well, or it's already here.
It's already here.
It's already here. The money's here. It's owned by a small chunk of the population that couldn't possibly spend it all in a single, not only in a lifetime, they couldn't spend it in multiple lifetimes.
In order for...
The money's here. We have the capabilities. There is... The only reason that we haven't fixed, at least on an economic sense, the only reason that we haven't fixed the Western world's economy is greed. That is the singular and only problem or stopping point. It could have all been fixed by now. The money exists. It's here.
Who should have the money?
Probably not that 1%. I don't know where else we should put it, but they don't need it. Then we're getting into my hyper-progress. These are my super left-wing niches of my
I think
ideology.
We want to get here as it really is, this sort of infringes on freedoms.
It does. Absolutely, it does. It does.
And you're okay with that?
It sort of. It infringes upon a certain portion of freedoms because those freedoms, freedom and perception of freedom, scales. There's, if you imagine a graph, okay, with the bottom, like this one, the bottom side of the graph being people who feel free, and the top of the graph is, or sorry, this is people who don't feel free, and the top of the graph is people who feel super free. Like that's on this gradient. This gradient is how much money a person makes. In the Western world, how free you feel is directly correlated to how much money you have. People who don't have money in America don't feel very free because they're not particularly free. People who have lots of money feel very free and they feel like everything is free. Like freedom is doing great because they have the money to be free. Do I think that some of those people at the top who have excessive freedom need to give up some of that excessive freedom to help some of the people at the bottom? Because some of the people at the bottom are being held there by a boot from people at the top. So to a certain extent, yes. This is something that I got into talking about with Mallory the other day, is in a historical sense, if we look back at what Teddy Roosevelt did with railway companies and oil companies,
right,
back in his tenure. I don't know if it's doable now, and I think we might have touched on this in the show before. At a certain point, certain people and small groups of people become too powerful and have to be broken up.
Right.
They just have to be. And yet that's taking what's theirs and giving it to other people, technically. Not but it has really. To happen. Because
no, it isn't taking it, giving it to other people. It just is breaking it up. It is not giving it away to other people.
True. But to a certain extent, the giving away, at this point, it's so, the gap is greater now than it ever was then when they did that. The wealth gap is greater now than it's ever been. Like,
so I count myself heights. As one in the lower echelon of the income society. I really do. I don't make a lot of money. Haven't for a lot of years. I have made a lot of money in the past, but I don't know. Nobody has a boot on my neck.
Can I be real with you?
Yeah.
You know why nobody has a boot on your neck?
Why?
Because you had money. You're white. You made connections. You've always got options. Too many people are born without that option. They're born with a boot on their neck.
Is there a boot on your neck?
No. Because I'm white and have connections. The only boot on my neck is the one that I put there myself. The only thing that stops me from rising in life in an economic sense is probably just my own not wanting to have my life revolve around how much money I make. I'm sure I could make more money. I live in a town where I could go make $100,000 a year at an entry-level oil patch job in a heartbeat if I so much as wanted to. All I'd have to do is pick up the phone. Be like, hey, Jim Bob, you looking for riggers? Cool, I'm on it. I could do it.
Okay.
But there are people in my country, less so, but especially in my country and America, that based on the color of their skin, the cities that they're born in, they won't have that option.
So you're saying
if the option exists, it is infinitely more difficult to acquire.
So you are saying if there is a guy in your town.
Yes.
Who is Asian.
Yes.
He can't make as much money as you.
The likelihood of him making as much money as me, the odds are reduced because of his ethnicity. Yes. Same goes if they're a woman. The odds of them making as much money as me are reduced. It's not to say they can't. It's just less likely, purely because of how they were, what genitalia they have or what skin color they have. And that's just a fact of life. And unfairness is an inevitability of life. But the parts of it that we can control as a society, we should be controlling, or at least making a better effort to do so.
So if you're in the U.S. and you are Hispanic.
Yeah.
There's a boot on your neck.
To a certain degree, yes. The chances of you making as much money as the next white person who could be born in the same area as you, the chances of you making it out of that area or out of that demographic is lower.
One of the richest men in the world is Hispanic.
Yeah. I'm not saying it can't happen. Okay. I'm just saying it is less likely to happen because of their skin color.
So we want to make everybody I don't know where this can go because...
We're talking big social change.
Yeah, but you want to say, if I heard you right, that those at the top of the money tree need to have less.
Yep. They don't need what they have. You cannot, there is no rational argument that is going to convince me that any human being needs hundreds of billions of dollars to their name.
No, they don't.
I don't believe it.
I don't.
Not in cash and not in assets.
I don't think I need to have three meals a day.
I think anyone making over $1 billion to their name in a given year is in excess. Anything past that, I couldn't care less. I do not. Here's my controversial statement for the year.
Okay.
And my swear word for the month, for the week, day, whatever. Swear word for the episode. If you're someone who makes over $1 billion in a year,
yeah.
I do not give a fuck about your rights to have more than $1 billion in a year. I could not care less. I care less about your right to have more than $1 billion than I care about stepping on a bug. I could not care less. You do not need that much money.
So there,
I don't care what your reasons are.
Hold on a second. Hold on. I'm going to push on this a little bit. I think this is important.
Please do.
So their rights and their freedoms in your world are alterable on the amount of money that they have.
Yep, because nobody makes more than a billion bucks without stepping on other people and knowingly stepping on other people. Nobody does it. You do not get to be a billionaire without squelching people beneath your boot heel. It doesn't happen.
How do you know that?
Because it's a fact of life. There is no, you cannot look at a Jeff Bezos and say that the things that he did on his rise to where he is were not beyond unethical. Obviously, he didn't go curb stomp a hobo into oblivion. But the way that he has changed the American economy for the worse, or look at gig economies, the way that they have changed our economy for the worse, they have made billionaires because of how they did that. They have to squelch people to get there. You don't make that kind of money in a lifetime without taking it from other groups.
I want to go back to the words you said,
mm-hmm.
that if you make more than $1 billion...
Anything past $1 billion, I don't think you deserve to have.
And you should give it up.
Yep.
It should be taken from you.
You should find something else to do with it. You could even choose what to do with it, but it should be philanthropic. The world would be fixed, or at least closer to being fixed so quickly, if everyone who had more than $1 billion just used everything past that and fed it back into the economy to make the world better. Every school would be funded. Every hospital would be paid for. All of it. Jeff Bezos could practically fix the healthcare system in America overnight with the kind of money that he has. Like, it's just greed. It is just greed. It doesn't need to exist.
It just amazes me that you laid a dollar amount on freedom.
Yeah. I feel like $1 billion is a pretty big dollar amount. I could probably be convinced to lower it too.
If you're in Africa, it probably is $1,000.
Yeah.
I am amazed that there is a dollar amount.
But that's the thing, though. It's not like they're losing base freedoms. They're just losing the right to have a redonkulous amount of money. That's the only freedom they're giving up. And I don't care about that freedom. I don't think it is a freedom. I don't think it's a human right to be filthy, stinking rich. That's a privilege. And having $1 billion is well above that privilege. But anything beyond that is just ludicrous.
So honestly, I could get behind the argument that hold them accountable for how they make it. I could get behind that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a hard time in getting behind this idea that if they have more, they shouldn't because they just shouldn't.
See, to a degree, I think it would, the problem, if let's say we instituted a way that, if, let's say we could snap our fingers and you could only make money ethically, like it's reasonably ethical now. Yeah. You wouldn't have many billionaires because it's not really easy to make $1 billion ethically. It's very difficult to do. And so I think the problem would to a certain degree sort itself out.
So I think that you're wrong. As I think with wealth, that as you get more, it grows exponentially. And so I think you're wrong about how to grow wealth and how it has to be unethical. I think there are people who are billionaires who did it ethically.
If there are, they're a vast minority. Vast minority.
Yes, but that does not matter in your world, because in your world,
if they have $1 billion, I think they can live with it. Yeah, they can deal with it. With $1 billion in their back pocket, they
can. So you're saying that and I have a huge issue with you having a value on freedoms, as if you have a value of $1 billion, what's to stop, say, the Prime Minister of Canada to say, you know what, I have a value on freedom, and it's $100,000. And if you make more than
you're doing a thing that you like to do a lot of times when I push these very hyper-progressive ideas, is that you look at, well, what if someone takes it too far? Well, don't take it too far. Stop them from taking it too far. Simple answer.
It's not too far, Will. It's a natural progression.
It's not a progression. You don't have to progress past what I'm saying.
Well,
you just did something like that. Like, I'm not
putting
saying
a dollar value. It's putting a dollar value on a right or freedom. And when you look,
I don't think that it is a right or a freedom, though, to have more than $1 billion. I don't think that needs to be a right. I don't think that is some intrinsically.
No, the
human
right
thing
is the ability to make $1 billion. It's not to have $1 billion.
$1 billion. Go ahead and make $1 billion.
And then I do that, and then I have to give it away.
No,
is what
it's if
saying.
You make more than $1 billion, you need to give it away. Only the part than that's above $1 billion.
Okay.
Once you hit $1 billion, you should be able to sit back on your laurels and be like, cool, I did it.
So that is your world, and your perception is that $1 billion is this huge dollar amount, and anything more than
that is an obscene dollar amount.
And I am saying, if you live in Uganda, mm-hmm, that it may be maybe $1,000 is this obscene amount of money. It could feed my family for 4 years with $1,000. Mm-hmm. Our healthcare would be fixed for $1 million.
The rules wouldn't necessarily apply to them because there aren't a lot of billionaires out of Uganda.
I bet there's more than you know.
Most of them got it out of supremely unethical means.
But what I'm saying is that this perceived value has a lot to do with your perception.
Of what?
The value of freedom. So for you, it's $1 billion.
But no,
for the guy
you're
in Uganda, it's $1,000 or $10,000 or $1 million.
I think that having over $1 billion is included in freedom, and I don't think it is. I think that having that much money, having consolidated that much wealth in one person, is oppressive. I don't think it's a freedom. I think it is a form of oppression, because it is almost impossible to get there without crushing other people on the way there. So I don't think it's a freedom. I don't think I'm infringing on anyone's freedom by saying that. I think I'm just holding them in check.
If I make $1 billion.
Yep.
And then I make a dollar more.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't have that other dollar.
No, you don't need it.
And that to me is where you're saying you don't have the right or the freedom to have that dollar.
Nope. You don't need it.
So I'm going to back off of this little bit.
I quickly want to jump over to Kyle's comments.
Yeah.
So if you have a traded company and you have if it goes over that amount, stop growing. Stop growing. Or sell off portions of it and keep your billion. You don't need bigger than that.
But what if you sell it and you get $80 billion? If you sell your portion of the company and you get $80 billion, you're saying
$79 billion and make your country better. Pay for kids' lunches. Help with drug rehabilitation. Help pay for healthcare. You could fix the country with the kind of wealth that we have people just sitting on in their metaphorical Scrooge McDuck towers. I have no sympathy. None. Zero.
It's not sympathy that I'm after, and it's not really even the money that I'm after. It's the idea that you or me in our little world are going to look at somebody else and say, you can't make more money than that. And that, to me, is a huge infringement on our ability to do what we want to do.
But you don't need to do that.
Oh, I'm not saying we
need to do that. You shouldn't do it.
It's sort of like an argument for guns. Let's relate this. I don't need to have an AR-15. Mm-hmm. But I want to have an AR-15.
Yeah, have an AR-15. Have $1 million. Have $100 million.
Okay. I don't need
a howitzer
to own
tank?
A tank. But I want the right to have a tank.
You shouldn't, because no person should have easy access to a tank.
Why not?
Because it's fucking dangerous. You shouldn't have access to something that can wipe out city blocks.
So is an AR-15 is dangerous?
It's but
arguably,
it on a
arguably,
scale,
arguably, it's more dangerous. I can hide under my coat. So
if you want to get really pedantic about it, yes, but no.
So this
it's like saying that a person should have the right to have a gun and have ammunition for the gun. It doesn't mean that you need truckloads of ammunition enough to supply a small army. You should
not?
Actually have the right to have, because you have no reason to have that. The only reason anyone should
ever
have
so we need a reason for
like
freedom.
That. No, but to have excess like that, you should. That's not. See, again, you're assuming that I think that it is a freedom to have those things. I don't. I do not consider that within the bounds of freedom. To have excess of $1 billion, to have a tank, that's outside the bounds of what I would consider freedom, or a person's right to have. So I don't think it's infringing on
that?
Any right, because I don't think the right exists.
So why is that?
Because I don't think it does. I don't think any person should have that kind of power. If there's one thing that reading about what America has done with all of its amazing advancements over the past couple of centuries has done, it has proven to me, I mean, I already knew this, but it has just hit another nail into the coffin, that people don't need the kind of power like that. There is no government, no person, no group that can ethically handle that much power. Nobody needs it. We do not need power consolidated into small pockets that heavily at any point in history, especially now. I don't think that any power corrupts absolutely, or absolute power corrupts absolutely. And when you're talking hundreds of billions of dollars under the control of a small cluster of people, that's pretty damn close to absolute power. When you have the amount of money that funds large scale first world countries within your sway, when you have an economy, like when you as an Amazon can sway elections based on where you put your plants, that is too much power. No group needs that much power. None.
You run the risk, and this is the how to say this. You have this number in mind of a billion.
I just, yeah, it's kind of an arbitrary number, but
it's an arbitrary number. It's a really big number.
Yeah.
If you have more than this, this is your number. And you're saying it's huge. It should never matter. If you have more than $1 billion, you don't need
wealth,
it. And that's not a
wealth is irrelevant.
And wealth is not a right.
Yeah.
Is in your ideal world. It is not a right to be wealthy.
Yeah.
It's a privilege.
Yeah, that usually people have to earn to a degree through hard work.
Okay. So in your world, you get to set that.
Yeah. I mean, let's say, yes, I set that. Yeah, that's me. That's my idea.
Whoever.
Vote will
2026. If you're in power, yes. If you're in power and you're going to say anybody over $1 billion, as I came up with this number, I like this number. It's a cool number. And I have, by God, elected on this number. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's right. Mm-hmm. You run the risk. And this is where this will break down. Of in a year, you have another guy who says, hey, why a billion? Why is it $500 million? Nobody needs more than $500 million.
Can we reassess when we get there?
And so you reassess. And you say, okay, why not $100 million?
Okay.
Why not $1 million?
Okay.
And you're okay with that.
If that's the consensus that people came to, I mean,
and
whatever.
This is
sure.
What you're going to have in
but
that.
But you're again, assuming that my idea is going to be taken to the nth degree.
No.
It's not.
No, I'm assuming that this idea usually is from the people who don't have.
Yeah.
It's from people like you and me who don't have a lot of money. And we look at those who do, and we say, wait a minute, you way up there, you don't need it. And I don't think that, and I'm going to argue with Kyle, of all the things I hate in this idea for the wealthy is taxing it.
Oh, yeah. I don't think taxing the wealth, I mean, in a perfect world, it would work just fine. But
as the government is the worst steward of money ever.
Yeah.
And all you're going to do is get a bunch of politicians who are rich. And so
I'm more than happy to let these people hand out their over $1 billion to wherever they need to, but it should be philanthropic. They shouldn't be able to feed it into another company to grow their brother's company up to $1 billion. Then he can grow his nephew's company to $1 billion. Then he can grow his kid's company to $1 billion. And they'll just have a nice level family tree of all just resting on that cap of $1 billion.
Oh, so you don't like that either.
Happen.
Oh, so you don't like that
inevitably. Inevitably, to a certain degree, it's going to happen. But when you take that and you level that playing field, even just that much, leveling it out like that, a certain amount of that, I think, is going to end up lower down the chain that will, in general, improve the world. And maybe you have to deal with it. Maybe you have to curtail how many billions can be within a certain family. Who knows? But they're going to inevitably try to fund their own interests anyways. And this comes down to watchdogging to make sure people aren't just living in loopholes, which currently the rich do.
So this.
Now,
this is, I find this really interesting on the value of freedom.
It's not a freedom, I don't think.
It's not a freedom.
So I don't know the value to it.
That owning money and working for money and getting what you work for.
Past a certain point.
Hold off on that for a second. Is you're saying if you work hard and you make $1 billion, then you do it honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's hard to do. I did it.
Yep. Congratulations.
It sucks to be you, Dave, I'm taking it.
No, I'm not taking it.
Or you have to give it away.
You have to get rid of it. Yeah.
You have to get rid of it.
Go buy a hospital. Go pay medical bills that exist to make your world a better place.
What if I want to give it to my 8 kids? So now you want to tell me how I have to use my excess money.
I mean, you need to use it in an ethical fashion. But yes, sure. There inevitably is going to have some sort of watchdog.
Okay. I love my kids. I want to give $1 billion
to
my kids. And you're saying, no.
Because giving children free money as an inheritance always works out best for them. That's how you get healthy, well-adjusted adults. So I've heard. It's just giving them crap loads of money as an inheritance.
I think, Will, that obviously we're going to disagree on this one, and this is going to be a topic of conversation. I find this fascinating in light of the episode that there is a price.
It's
freedom.
It's not, I mean, to a certain extent, that there's a little piece of me that wishes literally that this was the way things were. In reality, it wouldn't work because it would probably buckle the economy because those billionaires are mass consumers as well. And so the economy would, there's a lot to fix there. You couldn't just do it overnight. I'll leave that for another time. But
so we're going to have to get back to this as I think it's a larger episode and maybe again next week, as I think that this is the idea of freedoms. I had just assumed that we agreed that we are free to do with our lives as we like.
As long
short
as
short of not hurting other people.
But
and you're saying owning
a bunch
of money, if I do it ethically, is a bad thing.
I don't think that having more than $1 billion is a reasonably, there might be super fringe cases where it's doable. Maybe. Who knows? I sitting from what I know, the knowledge that I have, I don't think that making more than $1 billion is feasibly doable in a reasonably ethical fashion. And so I don't think the consolidation of that much power is I don't think it's ethical to have that much power, and I don't think there's any reasonable way to attain that much power ethically.
Oh, I think there are lots of ways of making $1 billion ethically. Look at Chick-fil-A. I don't think anybody is able to look at Chick-fil-A, who pays higher in every market than all of the fast food joints, who own a chain of restaurants, who aren't open Sundays, who have this whole ethics Monter, who are billionaires.
It's taken generations to get there, but yeah. they don't need more than that. Like imagine
how healthcare could probably be funded. But you're saying that they shouldn't have it. And that is my question.
They don't need They don't. There is no way they need that kind of money.
But it isn't about need. I don't need to have a bowl of popcorn every night.
But this is so far beyond that, though. This is like you eating thousands of bowls of popcorn every night. You kill yourself.
No, like, it's about the ability to...
The amount of money.
Have the popcorn.
The amount of money, though. Like, I don't want people to have the ability to be Scrooge McDuck. I don't want people to have the ability to do obscene things. I don't need... Like, there is no world where Jeff Bezos needs to have a yacht that's so big that it needs a docking bay for a smaller yacht to go aground. Like, the amount of excess is so astronomically beyond... It's not just like I'm curtailing your rights because I think that you're living life a little bit too lavishly. No, we're way past that. We're in gold-plated AK-47 territory that is just so obscene that it doesn't need to exist.
I agree with you, Kyle, on two of your statements. I think we need to start by limiting how much our politicians are paid.
Oh, absolutely. They shouldn't be able to publicly trade.
Give them
$100,000 a year salary. You're a politician because you care. You should not be in politics to make money.
I think this is just me. Is every politician ought to be paid minimum wage?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because their accommodations are covered, their travel is covered.
Yep.
All that stuff's paid for. And when they get out of politics, they're going to go write a book and become a millionaire. So yeah, absolutely. Minimum wage. I agree wholeheartedly. Pay them bupkis. It'll inspire them to raise the minimum wage when they see how much it sucks to live off of that.
And Z is smiling right now, or however you pronounce his name.
It's Winnie the Pooh. You can just call him Winnie the Pooh. He likes
Winnie
that.
Winnie the Pooh?
Yeah, he loves it.
I do like that. As I do think he's laughing in America right now, is I think that here's the rub, Will, is I think that when you look at rights and freedoms, mm-hmm. either you have them or you don't.
No, I think we have some and we don't have some sometimes. I don't think it's an all or nothing statement.
And you can have laws... If it be moral laws on the books or ethical laws on the books and say you can't hurt anybody making your money mm-hmm. or you can't hurt anybody if you own a gun or you can't hurt mm-hmm. anybody if you own a vehicle, you know, you can't be driving mm-hmm. on the sidewalks.
Those are definitely encroaching sort on people's of okay ability with to do whatever they want.
Yes, they are. And I agree that, you know, there are guardrails on our freedoms, yes.
Yeah.
And they usually are... how they hurt other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so as long as I'm in the road and I don't hurt anybody,
mm-hmm.
I'm doing good.
To use that same analogy, the problem that we're sitting in right now is that when we're telling people that they need to be careful with how they use their guns, we're telling a person who has so many guns that we have to be very careful how we ask them to use their guns or not use their guns because they have so many of them that they are a threat. We have to be careful how we deal with a Jeff Bezos and an Amazon. We have to be careful how we deal with them because they can buckle the American economy in overnight.
Yes, they can. And I'm not a... It's a longer conversation, I think. And maybe you will extend mm-hmm. this to next week. Because we're already at an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And now you're really eating the fruit out of your cocktail. So we probably...
This is the best part of the cocktail, baby.
We probably should end this as we're at an hour and 30 minutes. And it's been a long, long show. And it's not going to go uphill from there.
We might need to cut this podcast in half.
So...
Part one and part two.
So we're going to come back to this in a week.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to continue this. As I believe that this is... This is the area where you and I most likely are the farthest apart.
I feel like I've left you flabbergasted with a couple of my statements tonight.
Well, I think, again, there is not the we're going to talk about it next week.
Yeah. Stay tuned, folks.
Stay tuned for part two of Freedoms. and we'll find a good old little graphic to throw on the.
I've already got a couple of ideas in mind.
Okay, well, William, do you have anything to say to our viewers before we quit?
I do.
Thank you for joining us on The Will and Dave Show. You can find us on social media at The Will and Dave Show and anywhere fine podcasts can be found. Don't forget, stay safe and don't die out there.